Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Network that addresses issues and solutions concerning the Black community presents Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptops, you could dial 516-531-9540, 516-531-9540, and press 1 if you have a comment or a question. The lineup for the week: on Tuesdays we have Black Urban America, and that is me. And I am your host, Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne. On Thursday, or every other Thursday, we have Port of Harlem by Wayne A. Young. And on Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought by Carlton Sneed. Now, what does the future look like for our youth? How will they lead? What type of society and issues will face them? Who will lead? Well, tonight to discuss that is Associate Minister at Messiah Missionary Baptist Church, and she has a background in information technology management. Her name is the Reverend Dr. Tamala Butler Walker. Dr. Walker, are you with us?
Yes, I am. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening.
Good evening and welcome to Black Urban America. Dr. Walker, I want you to meet my co-host, Ms. Michonne Williams.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great.
So tonight, we're going to be discussing how we're raising our future leaders. And when we talk about future leaders, we're talking about youth and young folks. Okay, what needs to change? Well, what type of issues that Black youth will face in the future?
Well, looking at the current status quo right now in today's society in 2021, our youth are still susceptible to racism, to hatred, to prejudices, to lack of education, to various things. If we don't start training our children to be aware of their surroundings and educating them on the positive side of life versus always the negative side of life, we give them an opportunity to have a better life. But it takes us as the adults to be the examples for them, to train them up so that they see. Because children, they only learn from example. So the example we set for them, if we set the life of running the streets, doing everything else, then what are they going to do? They're going to follow that footstep. But if you set the examples to being leaders like our former president, Barack Obama, being leaders like John Lewis, being leaders like Dr. King, and you constantly throw that positive influx in front of them versus the negative, you have a better chance of creating a better society for our youth and greater opportunities for them.
Well, it has been said by Black young adults that black adults has shortchanged our youth. So what's your comment towards that?
I have to totally agree with that.
Oh.
I say that.
Hold up. You cannot say that all black adults, I mean, maybe as a collective.
Not all black adults.
Maybe as a collective. You know, we shortchanged them. Yes, maybe
right.
as a collective. And maybe as a collective, we allow certain entities in our society to, I don't want to say the word brainwash, but to lead our youth astray. Maybe as a collective we did, but there are some black adults out there that have been working on the grassroots level, businesses, or whatever avenue they're on that they're
right.
trying to address the issues or fight the issues that you said before, racism, police brutality, and what have you. So, I'm sorry.
Right.
Go on. Got you wrong.
You're good. The reason why I made that statement that way, I don't totally agree with that, but at the same time, I have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mother. Come from my perspective, I'm a mother of three black children, okay?
Right.
They grew up in a lily white community, and I say this because they grew up in West Virginia. 90% of the state of West Virginia, as we all know, is predominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
My son graduated high school. He was one of the, I'd say 2% in that class that was African American. That's the least amount, okay? Well, what I chose to do when my kids was young and they were going to school and all they had was white kids in the classroom with them, I chose to make them active in things that created a positive outcome for them. As a mother and along with their father at the time, we worked together to give our kids a better life. Things came out my son, Miles. And when I say it shocked me, it knocked the breath out of me. He said, Mom, why should I go to college in the future when you and Dad don't have a degree? And at that time, my son was no more than 8 years old. I had to look at that. I'm going to solve the problem. What did I do? I went back to school. And I kept going back to school, setting that example, because I had to come to realization, I'm the example setting. How can I say to them that you're going to do A, B, and C, and D, or this is what I'm expecting of you, and I'm not doing it myself? I can't ask that of my child. But the one thing I can do is I can set the tone, set the example, and be the forward leader for them so that they see a different aspect of life.
We're going to touch on that later. You touched on that a little bit just now. We're going to touch on that later. College versus starting your own business. STEM curriculum versus a labor curriculum. We're going to get into all of that, you know, if time permits.
So,
we're going to get into that, and I'm glad you brought that up. And we need to, we're going to explore that later on. Okay.
Yeah, let me explain something to you with that. It's another component of that. It didn't just stop with my three children. That ended up being a mentor to over 100 and some kids. And I got them active in the state of West Virginia legislation. Those children, I took to the Capitol and had them to learn what it took to be a senator, what it took to be a representative, what it took to be a governor, what it took to be a lieutenant governor. The example we set as an adult for our youth will either pivot them in the right direction or pivot them in the wrong direction. The choice is ours to be the better example.
What do you think is happening to black youth today?
Well, I live in a community where I see it every day. I see they're following what they see on TV. They're following the video games. They're following what is happening on television for as the negative aspect. If you look at, turn the TV on nowadays, you see everything, which anything on television nowadays. Because in the era I grew up, I didn't see this stuff. I didn't see the drug paraphernalia being transferred on the television. I didn't get to see that. We had to guess at what it was. But now for our youth today, everything is up close, personal, and right in front of their faces. They see it every day.
And that's media.
And that's
media.
And that's media.
And it's a
right.
lot of exposure. It's a lot of negative exposure in media also.
Correct.
And what media does, I hate to say, they socialize our children. And I'm going to add another word, racially socialize our youth. You know, we want you to act this way, which make it easier for white supremacy. Well, that's my view. Let me go on. There's a lot of talk about developing skills. What type of skills do you think our youth needs in order to combat the issue they're going to face in their future?
Well, the best thing that you can do with developing skills for kids that they need to combat as teachers, as parents, as leaders in community, find out what that kid's passion is and develop that skill. If that kid has a passion for technology or engineering or architecture or whatever it is, get them active in that. Get back the programs like Junior Achievement, the programs like Upward Bound, the programs that gave our kids the opportunity. Stop closing the Boys and Girls Club where they can get that hands-on, where you can have people come in and teach these kids how to do that. If their passion is music, get them in the right with the right people so they can do that. We can't do this by just saying to the kids, okay, yeah, that's your passion, and do nothing about it. But we have to do it collectively. It takes all the leaders from the church house to the schoolhouse to the city, to government, to work together to make a better youth and a better future for them.
Michonne, I know you have a question.
Yes, I do. In your program, how do you celebrate the strengths of the black youth?
How do I celebrate the strengths of the black youth? I applaud them for their accomplishments. No matter how small it may look, they need that recognition. They need to know that they are valuable. They need to know that they are worth something. If we don't take our black youth and tell them, you know what, you are smart, you are intelligent, you are worthy of everything that you accomplish. You have to speak positivity. Because if we don't speak that positivity, because so many times, let's think about it, we hear the statement, you're never going to amount to anything. That tricks something in their head to think less of themselves. So I learned a long time ago that, you know what, I tell kids all the time, no matter what walk they're from, you are smart, you are intelligent, you have skills and talents that nobody else has, because those skills and talents was created just for you. Exceed on it. And they can succeed at anything if we keep giving them positive feedback, if we keep showing them, okay, yes, you made a mistake, but let's find out how we can correct this and go in the right direction. Stop beating them down. Start pushing them up.
How do you teach youth how to handle situations where they are judged differently and they have to work twice as hard?
I teach them this, and this is something that I use with my children. I said, regardless of the color of your skin, regardless of your ethnic background or your religious belief, you are valuable. You are a masterpiece created by the hands of God. That masterpiece is just like Da Vinci created the Mona Lisa. That masterpiece is valuable. You are just as valuable as the $1 million people will pay to own that Mona Lisa. You equal that Mona Lisa. So you excel to that Mona Lisa. No matter what somebody may say to you, you look at them and you say thank you, and you just move right on and you brush it off And it's kind of like you take it and you say, I got to change that perception by being better than what they said I am.
How can resilience be built among black boys?
Ooh, black boys.
Mm-hmm.
That is a challenge with the black African-American boys because they have so much that they have been stereotyped in a certain way. But being that I have a son stereotyped in school, but what I did with him was I told him, I said, look, you can either let that stereotype dictate your future or you can take your future and dictate it for yourself. It's up to you what you choose to do with it. And what you do is I took him and a couple of other young boys I had around me at the time, and I taught them. I said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? What do you plan to accomplish out of your life? And I would challenge them, and I still do this today. I challenge every kid that's in my presence, whether you're a black boy or white or a black girl, I challenge all of them, and I tell them, what do you want to do with your life? Write a business plan for yourself. Decide now what's your destiny and where you want to go. How I did that with my son, I did it so well that he's now an IT director at 31 years old, and he's been an IT director for a company since he was 24. But at the end of the day, I set that pattern with him so that he knew, because when he started to fall through the cracks or tried to go to the street, I had to grab him and say, hold up. Mm-mm. We ain't doing a drug life. Mm-mm. We're not doing that life over there. We're going to do this life over here. It takes us, there's an old saying, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes everybody in the community. It takes all of us. It takes everybody to work together to get, if it's just this one child going down the wrong path, it takes all of us to collectively work at that child and say, hey, you are better than that. And even when they try to go that way, you're like, look, where do you want to end up at? Do you want to end up at the University of Penn State, or do you want to end up in the Penn State, the state pen? Which one you want to go with? And you know what I did?
A lot of them choose in the Penn. You know, yeah. A lot of our community, especially in urban areas, was left of. Black communities or black urban areas because
right.
of gentrification, we all being displaced. Mm-hmm. But you said
right.
community, the village. Do you think mm-hmm. the village, and I'm getting away from my structural question, but you brought up the
okay.
village. Do you think the village is strong these days? It looks like the village is being torn down.
I agree with you. It does look like it's been in some areas.
Internally
yes.
and externally.
Correct. And how I can say that is right now I'm running for office in my city to try to rebuild the village. To try to rebuild the
yeah.
village. It takes – here's something I've learned in studies and reading different authors, different things, and researching different things. I've learned over time in educating myself and being a very big advocate of education, from homeschooling kids that were less fortunate, that couldn't adapt to the classroom setting, to being a mentor at a school with children and youth that needed that mentoring, that didn't have that mom at home or that dad at home because one parent was in jail and one parent wasn't. Being that role model to take that stand and say, hey, you're valuable, you mean something to me. What happens to you happens to me. That's what it means by village, because what we have lost our perspective, if we look back to the old days, our village was solid and strong.
It was.
You
okay.
did on
Fact.
The corner, but so-and-so knew down the street, and everybody knew it. So, hey, our village was solid and strong. Now our village is like, you get yours. I got mine, you get yours. We got to get out that concept. And we got to get to the we factor, because the we factor is what matters. The we factor is what's going to create a new village, The We Factors is going to build a better society for our young black boys and our young black girls to be successful. I speak that with passion because now I'm a grandmother. I have a 10-year-old grandson that's subjectable in Atlanta, Georgia, to any and everything on the streets. But at the end of the day, I thank God every day his mother and his father have the mindset to constantly keep him in a positive aspect versus allowing him to get caught up and entrapped in the mess that's in the street. The problem we have today is so many people want somebody else to watch after their kids. Xbox
that's
watching
that. That's why I have Weed Talk Productions.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I have Weed Talk Productions.
Yeah, I was just researching something the other day. I was doing some research, and Harvard University has a groundbreaking report that they just recently released about American youth and the civic and political role and how they need to be active in that so they can understand what it takes for the country to run. Our African-American kids lack that knowledge. They lack it like no other because it's a conversation that's brushed under the rug. We have to be advocate about teaching our kids. I thank God for a woman like Kamala Harris being our first African-American Asian woman that's the vice president of the United States. I thank God for a woman like Michelle Obama. But also we need a lot more black men outside of Barack Obama, outside of the John Lewis's, that's really out there in the local community making a difference and having a voice for our young black boys to see that role model.
How's your high schools being involved in the preparation for leadership? Because it looks like the high schools are not, do not, or turn that back on that responsibility. Or
they need to
be the community, like you said, or maybe youth organizations, or how about parental responsibility? Or should it be a combination of them all? And if you feel that it should be, well, who should take the charge in building, preparing the youth for leadership?
Okay. One of the things we can do that I see that should be done, it's going to take a combination of everybody, from the parents to the church to the elected officials to the school system. We have a responsibility that we must be held highly accountable for our youth. Instead of us sitting here saying what they're not going to amount to, why aren't we saying as leaders what they can amount to and show them by bringing them into the involvement in that? The school system can do something by getting back to the basics, making sure that no child is left behind academically, making sure that these kids are getting the best education they can get, and also partnering with universities to come in and train those kids on what the future holds for us college life. The biggest problem we run into is our kids are losing that aspect of desire to further their education because they're not shown the pathway on what it takes. Creating programs that will bring an interaction with them that they actually get to experience. That's why I said Upward Bound. I participated in Upward Bound. Upward Bound gave me an opportunity to live on a college campus in the summer months and get the gist of the college life while I was in high school. That opened the door for me to want to excel higher because it challenged me to do something greater. That's what we need to get back to, those programs to do something greater. Job Training Participation Act, get back to that. Get back to training our kids. Junior achievement, you don't barely hear about that anymore. But we need to start creating those programs because those are junior CEOs, our junior vice presidents, our junior finances, our junior CIOs, everything. That's our future leaders. They don't know if we don't teach.
Well, I have a question. I have a question, Dr. Walker. I have a question. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have many people on the show from different professions. And There are some who say that maybe the college is not the route. Maybe they should start thinking about starting their own businesses. We're the only culture that train our children to go work for others, but don't start their own business, and then don't leave for the next generation. So what do you think of that thought? You know, like preparing our youth to start their own businesses, being entrepreneurs, as well as having their skills and what have you. What do you say to the population that feel that's what the youth of tomorrow should focus on?
Well, in order for them to focus on that, they got to get some entrepreneurship training.
Right.
How you give them entrepreneurship training is you create programs like Junior Achievement. What Junior Achievement is a program that inspires young people to succeed and inspires them to become community volunteers by learning corporate America. How can they start a business if they have no clue what it takes, A, to write a business plan, B, to write a marketing plan, C, to get the financing obtained? You got to have that information if you don't be successful. Okay, I'm going to pivot back to my son again. The reason why I'm doing that, because I'm going to show you something. Him and his friends came to me when he was about 9 or 10 years old, and they said, we want to get a rake and some trash bags so we can go rake leaves in people's yards. We got a lot of elderly people that need their yards raked, and they will pay us. Do you know what I challenged those kids to do? Write me a business plan. I taught them how to do that. They wrote me a business plan. Tell me what it requires to do that. What's the financial aspect of it? What are you going to charge the price per yard depending on the size of the yard? How are you going to do this, and when is your work schedule going to be? They did that. They were very successful at it. They not only did the raking of leaves, they went to shoveling snow. They went to cutting grass. They got to that point that they did that for a while until they were like, 15 or 16 years old. But they were able to do something, and they structured it in a successful pattern. The key to success is you train a child. If you train the mindset of a child to be successful, and you start at the formative years, and I'm not talking about 5 to 10, I'm talking 0 to 5. The problem with society is we don't start at 0 to 5. If we start at 0 to 5, speaking that positivity in those children and teaching them, you can. Why don't we try this, or challenging them at something, they'll be successful.
Yeah, that's what the Japanese do. They start from 0 to 5.
Yeah. Thank you. That's where I learned it from.
I don't know.
That's where I learned
that. Yeah. As a matter of fact, they had to take tests to get into kindergarten.
That's right.
Go ahead, Ms. Sean. You'll go.
Okay. Does your program take into consideration the effect of race, ethnicity, and gender on one's ability to be a successful leader?
Yes, it does. I take that very much into effect because I look at each person's talent, each person's abilities, and each person's knowledge. Because not everybody grasps things the same way. You have some that it challenges them to try to read the instructions to do it, but if you give it to them and they show it to them one time, they have the ability to follow that visual. They're visual based. You have some that are not visual based, that are analytical based. They have to literally analyze every aspect of it. You have every child is different, but you have to be able to adapt to that child's capability to be successful. I'm a former teacher, and I say this from that perspective. Like I said, I homeschool kids. I got approached by the Board of Education in West Virginia to do that, a lily white state to do that. And I got the privilege to take those kids that had different learning patterns and structure them in a way that they were successful. Their patterns. I watched. I said, okay, your niche is math. Your niche is science. Your niche is history. Hold up. We're going to focus every language for you on math, every school project for you on history, and every school project for you on science. So that's how I got them through it. And once I got their niche, it was a wrap. They were done. They were off and running. You couldn't stop them because a child's mind is like a sponge. Once you get it to absorbing your knowledge, they're going to want more. They're thirsty for more. That's the key. The key is finding their niche. Once you find that niche, they'll go with it. You find every kid's niche, you're good. You're going to have some of those that fall through the crack, though. But once you get it, you're good.
You mentioned No Kid Left Behind. How do you feel about high school students performing at third grade levels? And do you think they should have been promoted? I mean, because to me, I think it's just absolutely crazy for somebody to promote someone who is reading at a third grade level, but they're in high school or performing at that level. So I personally don't believe in No Kid Left Behind if you're promoting them and they're not at least on the level that they should be.
I agree with you 100%. And the reason why I agree with you 100%. The reason why I say that, I had a student that, that's just how I started homeschooling, so you know. I had a student, a young lady. She, when I got this young girl, she was 13 years old, but her academic level was of a first grader. When I got her, I had to sit there and say, let me start back with the basics. So I took her back to preschool and started with the basics. But once I said I got her niche and found out what was her, what she was thirsty for, and once I got her there, I was able to take that girl and accept her. She graduated high school. When I got her, she technically, according to the school system, was in the fifth grade because they had passed her along every year. When I got her, she was in the fifth grade. We went to a function that her old, two of her old teachers was at that she had in elementary school that passed her along, and which I agree with you 100%. And that young girl, the teacher walked up to her and said to her, she said, how are you doing? She said, fine. She said, what grade are you in? Are you still in the fifth grade? And that's what the teacher asked the child. The child turned around and said to her, I am perplexed as to why you would ask me that question. The teacher was perplexed altogether because she was like, do you really understand what that word means? She said, that is my vocabulary word this week, and I am obligated by my teacher to use every vocabulary word in a complete sentence in conversation. She said, and by the way, perplexed means confused. The teacher looked at her. She said, how? She said, I'm homeschooled. And she called me Aunt Tam, and she said, Aunt Tam teaches me. And she has gotten me from the level that you left me at to where I'm now about to graduate high school. I started in the fifth grade, but I'm now a senior getting ready to test out of school. That blew everybody's mind because they were like, what did you do? Because I got started getting bombarded with people. What did you do to get her? I said, simple. I gave her a book, and I started challenging her to that book. That was all it took. You give her a book. If you'd have gave her a book, she'd have excelled. But passing her alone or putting her in a corner or saying she doesn't matter is your mistake as a teacher because you're obligated to educate every child that comes in your classroom.
How do you teach youth about relationship building?
I have taught youth about relationship building by teaching them how to value themselves first before you can value somebody else, how to respect themselves. And I've asked the question, now, what you just did, first if they act out, I said, and what you just did you respect yourself? And they'll say to me, yeah, I said, I want you to think about that before you answer me so quickly. Look at what you did, think about your actions, think about the consequences of those actions, and how did you respect or disrespect yourself? And they'll say to me, you know what, auntie, I didn't respect myself. I said, okay, what should you change? I said, because what you did, you don't want nobody to treat you that way. So what should you change? How I treat others, how I should value myself enough to say to myself, if I mistreat so-and-so, how would that affect my character as a person? I said, hold yourself accountable for your integrity, for who you are, not just for the color of your skin. But because you have a very strong mind and you can do anything you choose to do. But if you want to accomplish great goals, you've got to change those behaviors to make a better person out of yourself. And that has happened. I had a young boy that was that way. He acted out all the time in a very bad way. And one day I got him and I challenged him to do the study of some wars in history. He chose World War I, and he studied it. And he came back to me. I said, where do you see yourself in that? And he told me. He said, I see myself in here because I'm destroying that country, all because I'm angry about something that happened over here. Right. I said, now how do you deal with that from now on? By talking to the person I have the problem with, right, and by addressing the issue. There you go. And now he came up to me as an adult and said, I thank you for teaching me how to respect myself and hold myself accountable for my actions and how to respect somebody else, which has built me better relationships with my mother, my sister, and my friends. That's how I trained them. That's basically it, just giving them facts of life.
If you had a youth that plans to go into corporate America, what advice would you give him or her about the corporate ceiling?
I will actually take the time to sit down with them and teach them something about it. I'm a business owner. I have three businesses that I own. I would train that child entrepreneurship. I would teach that child, in order to be successful in any business, if you're going into corporate America and you want to make a great success and you want to create a franchise and you want to go global, this is what you have to do. Strategize. Take your passion. Apply it. Write your thoughts down. Keep a journal. That's very crucial in that process. Keep a journal of what visions come to you. That's just like, who was it? Ford, that developed the Ford vehicle. That man literally analyzed and saw that, and he designed it, and as he wrote down specs and did that, he began to apply it. That's what we have to do with our youth. Teach them and train them. Write down your thoughts to be successful. What do you want to do with this thought? Where do you see it taking you? Because when we write it down, it makes it become so surreal. It becomes visual to you then. And you can then say, hey, I want to go, hey, B and C. Okay, let's research that. Okay, let's look at this particular field and go from there. I'm a restaurant owner. I do graphic design. In my graphic designs, I design T-shirts as well as anything graphical that you need. I have a women's ministry that I do. All three of those, I am successful. I'm becoming extremely successful at because I stuck to the grind. And I teach them that just success does not come overnight. Success is when you take your time and put the necessary efforts in learning that skill and pushing that skill. It's not something that you can pick up and put down. It's something that you have to stick to and grind at to be successful at it. That's how corporate America got there. That's how we have to get there.
Before, you said that our youth need mentors. What type of mentors are needed?
They need mentors from all walks of life. You need somebody that, okay, let's say for instance, you have a young girl and she's interested in fashion design. And she's interested in learning that trade very well. She needs someone that's in that particular field to mentor her. So you go out and find that person to mentor them. And you get that child active in things associated with her passion is. You have a young boy that's into computer engineering. You get him with someone that's trained in that field that can mentor that child, that can say, hey, this is what it is. Go back to the days when we used to take our children to work with us. They don't do that as much as they used to. Taking your kids to work so that they can see what it takes for your job to be successful. I still technically do it because I work from home. So when my grandson is visiting me, he's at work with me, and he's there, and he sees what I do. When I'm doing political work, he's right there by my side. When I'm at my restaurant, he's right by my side. I don't leave him out of the equation because I want him to learn what it takes to get there. The key is we have to take ownership. Whether you're a politician, whether you're a school teacher, whether you're an engineer, no matter what you do, or a grocery store owner, take the time to mentor those youth that are have that passion to doing that so they know how to do it. Kids are not going to learn unless we set the example, and also they're not going to learn unless we involve them in it.
It seems to be a disconnect between adults and youth today. And I don't know if that's by design or I don't know because of the economic, financial conditions of our communities. But how can we encourage adults to become, because at one time, it was like easy to get mentors. Now, it's very difficult to get folks to mentor youth. How can we encourage that?
Well, we can encourage by having conversations with adults about it and asking them what their input is, asking them what they think. Get their thoughts. Getting the adults like, okay, the church I go to, my pastor, he used to be superintendent of a school system, and he would actually encourage and get the parents involved. Just like we do it with our youth now, we get the parents involved. I'm a mentor because I mentor and I adopt families. It's something that I learned a long time ago as a little girl because I was adopted and raised by my aunt and uncle. And because of that adoption, it pivoted something and triggered something in me to want to continue to do that. So as I grew up, I would adopt a family or a friend or someone to take under my wing and mentor. I still do that today. I still have extra kids that I take under my wing and say, hey, and when they're down, I say, what's bothering you? And I mentor them by just lifting their spirits and talking to them and getting to know them and giving them the motivation that they need. In order to get the kids involved, we have to start getting the adults involved. We can't just say to these kids, all right, yeah, you need to do A, B, C, and D. But if we don't show them by saying, let me take you by the hand and guide you how to do this. Like she asked me the question about how to get them into entrepreneurship. They won't know unless you take them and teach them. They won't know about politics unless you take them and teach them. They won't know how to be a good future school teacher unless you take them and teach them. You don't teach them, you don't mentor them, they won't know. But making the adults realize that they are accountable for these kids, holding them accountable, holding their integrity in front of them, that makes a difference. Because that's what I do to a lot of adults. When somebody puts the youth down, I say, remember that you are accountable what you say to that kid.
You know, it's most adults today really don't have a positive perception of our youth. How can we change that perception?
We need to get more that do have a positive perception about our youth out there. Just like we can get all the people together to deal with the hatred and the racism that we're dealing with in our country, we can get all these people together to deal with that. Why can't we get all these people to change the perspective of our youth? It's not going to change till we all come together on one accord for the common goal of creating a better future. How can we change the racism if we don't start training our children to it? How can we change the perspective of how black kids are looked at versus white kids are looked at versus Asian kids or Jewish kids or Hispanic kids? We can't change that unless we create a united front as adults and as leaders and doing something about it. It's not going to change till we as an adult hold ourselves 100% accountable for how these children perceive things. The conversations that we have in the privacy of our homes, talking hatred about other cultures amongst in front of our youth has created that dichotomy to be where it is today. But if we can start having those positive conversations at home in front of our kids to say, you know what, I need to teach you how to be friends with this culture. I need to teach you how to understand this. That's what's going to make a difference. We are, or what color race we are to be held accountable for the actions that we do.
All right. Go ahead, Michonne.
What are three things that are used to develop self-confidence that you teach the youth?
The three things that I use that I keep seeing is develop confidence, is believing in oneself, is one. Knowing who you are is two. And three, not judging yourself so harsh. Because what we have today with not just youth, but with the African-American race as a total whole, is we lack self-confidence in ourselves. We also lack valuing who we are and what we contribute to society. We don't. It's like we don't know our place. We feel like we're displaced. Technically, we're not displaced. We can either choose to have a voice and change it and hold ourselves up individually as well as collectively as a race in total to make a difference. We can't fight something if we don't hold ourselves up. The reason why we keep going back in the same cycle is because we keep allowing it to take place. We keep doing things against each other, never, ever elevating each other to the next level.
How can problematic behavior be improved?
Problematic behavior can be improved simply by teaching accountability, one, find the source of the problem and the behavior, two. And three, by simply making time to address that issue, not just brush it under the rug. You know how when mama used to tell you to clean the room and the fastest way you got done is you put everything under the bed? Stop doing that. Take it out. Deal with it. Face it. Own it. And when you face it and you own it, you begin to make a change with it. When you got problematic issues, that's what you deal with. And you deal with that in a positive way. Yeah, you're going to have some negative people be negative. Sometimes that's a part of life. Not everybody's positive and not everybody's negative. But it is what it is. You have to know how to deal with issues when they come up. You have to train yourself. Another way of dealing with problematic issues is actually taking the time to sit down with that individual. As a minister, I do it all the time. Tell me why you did A, B, C, and D. And what did you accomplish from that behavior? Once you get the answer and you say, okay, how could you change that pattern? What are some ways that you can make a difference in yourself to be a better person with that issue, to not let it control you, to not let it dictate you? That's what you do. You challenge the person.
How do you teach the youth discipline? Because, you know, it's hard for adults to be disciplined. So how do you teach a youth
you ain't never
to be
lying.
Disciplined?
I think I have to teach adults that too, as well as you. How I teach them how to be disciplined. Being a minister, I use myself as an example for them. And one of the things that I have told them is, if you can't control your temper, your behavior, your mood, and you allow what others say or do to you, dictate you, you're allowing them control over you. You're allowing them to have you be in that disadvantage of people putting a label on you to, oh, that's just a wild child that's not disciplined. But if you take that disciplinary action that somebody may tell you, like mom may say, I'm going to take such and such away from you, or mom might say, you can't go here or you can't hang with this person. If you take that disciplinary action and say, okay, let me evaluate why I'm in this position, that behavior begins to change. Remember I told you about the young boy I had a problem with? Let me tell you what he was doing. He was taking a roof off of a building, the community center. He was destroying public property. The police did not take him to jail. The police brought him to me. Now, remember, this is West Virginia. The police brought him to me. And they said, Ms. Walker, you have a great track record of getting kids to understand things. So what I did with him, which I did with my three children, I said, since you want to behave to get yourself in jail, I'm going to give you a taste of jail at home. And I did. His mom gave me permission, so I had him in my house. And I gave him a taste of jail. I didn't give him the nice version, the luxury version. I gave him the real version. I gave him the whole nine yards, because my ex-husband at the time, he worked in the, he was a deputy sheriff before when we first got married, and I knew what the jail life was like. So I took that and applied it. I gave that child hope because I changed his perspective. I said, do you want this life in your future? He said, no, ma'am. I said, then change your behavior. Think before you act. Just like people tell you to think before you speak. Think before you act. Ask yourself the question, is that action going to cause a consequence that I'm not ready to handle? Or should I take this action, which is going to cause a positive consequence? Always ask the question. And I took that, and that's how I managed to make changes in a lot of children that had behavior issues. Still doing it today. I even do it with adults, just so you know.
How do you teach children how to, or you, to overcome fears? You know, because there's adults who have fear of success, fear of failure, all that. How do you teach the youth?
How I teach to overcome fear, I ask the question. I said, ask a question. What is fear? Can you define it for me? I always ask them that. I said, what's fear? Define it for me. And I challenged them. I said, define it. What does it mean for you to be fearful of what you're about to embark on? And they were like, it means that I have the opportunity to fail, or I don't feel I'm good enough, or I don't feel this, or I don't feel that. I said, well, let me ask you a question. If I didn't believe in you that you're capable of doing what I'm asking you to do, is that me being fearful? They said, no, that's you believing in me. I said, then why aren't you believing in yourself? Enough to take that fear that you have and make that, pivot off of that, and go from there. They were like, well, how did you do it? I said, this is what I did. I said, do y'all know what it was like for me? Because I'm a child, okay? I'm going to go back to my childhood. I'm going to give y'all some information here. I'm a young girl at the age of 7-8 years old, and my mother was an opera singer. My adopted mother was an opera singer. She sung opera. And I started singing one day, and her and some of her friends heard me sing, and they said, you need to put her into music. And I got into it. Well, I got the privilege to travel around the world. By the time I was 17 years old, I do believe I've gone to 42 countries by the time I was 17. Well, not only did I sing, but I played the violin, viola, cello, and bass. I conducted symphonies. I played concert pianos. But I had to overcome that fear of being in front of the public because I was very shy. At the beginning, I was like, I'm not going out there. They're like, take that fear, channel it into your talent, and let it out. I learned that trick a long time ago, to take that fear, challenge it, take it and channel that fear into the gift that I have and just let it go. And I was able to stand center stage in England, in Russia, in Germany, in Paris, in Montreal, all over the world, either singing or playing the violin as a concert violinist or conducting the symphony or doing ballet. I challenge that. So I tell the kids to take your fear, bottle it up. That is your source to make you successful. Take that fear, bottle it up, and use it to push what you got to do. Whatever it is, you can overcome it because you have to challenge yourself to say, do I let this fear overtake me or do I overtake it?
Well, Dr.
Okay,
Wolf,
mm-hmm. Your opinion on this. Do you feel that leaders are born or are they taught?
Honestly, that's a 50-50, and I say that for a reason. Everybody that is born on this earth is technically born as a leader because they're created as a masterpiece for a purpose. We all have a purpose. That purpose means that you may be a leader in the aspects of politics. You may be a leader in the aspects of knowledge. You may be a leader in the aspects of science. You may be a leader in the aspects of engineering. You may be a leader in the aspects of entrepreneurship. Whatever that is, you have to be understanding that what your gift is, you're already born a leader by that gift. The key is training yourself or learning that skill and be holding on to that skill and challenging yourself to it. The only way kids, youth have the opportunity to be successful future leaders and future presidents and future CEOs and future CFOs and future architects, future car dealership owners, no matter what it is, they have the ability to be successful because they are already created a leader. It's not something that you're born with. It's the gift and the talent that's embedded in you that creates you to be that leader. There is not one person in this world that is not a leader. You just choose to cower down and just be a follower, or you choose to step up with your gift and be that leader in that gift to be successful.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left. Dr. Walker, mm-hmm. You say you're running for office. What office? I think you run for state Congress.
No, I'm city council.
Oh, city council. In what town?
Mm-hmm. In the city of Duquesne, Pennsylvania.
Right, right. So how's that going for you?
Going very well. As well as to be expected, I sometimes ask myself the question, when do I have time to think, to even sleep or anything? But it's actually going extremely well, better than I anticipated. With what I do in the community and how I have a passion for it, I structured my platform on three words: we the people. Didn't leave it. And I won't leave it. Because at the end of the day, I hear people gripe and complain about, well, this person's doing this, or that person's doing this, or they're not doing this, or they're not doing that right. I've learned to tell people, ask not. And John F. Kennedy said this well, what America can do for you. But ask what you can do for America.
Well, I think black folks have been doing a lot for America. Black folks have been speaking for America. Inventions, from education to politics. I think black folks is like the greatest American.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I agree with you, because what I tell kids, being that I'm running for office now, because I've had youth ask me questions. They've asked me, well, Reverend Walker, I said, yeah. They said, we understand you're running for council. What do you plan to do for us? I plan to make you the next mayor. I plan to make you the next police chief. I plan to make you the next black fire chief. I plan to make you all something that's going to make a difference in this community. You could be a business owner and have a great chain of stores going through the community. You can be doing this. I give them all that positive influence. And I say, I want to create future leaders by mentoring them to be there. You can't, we hinder ourselves and when we run for office. Some people get on this pedestal that I've made it and I'm here. We got to get off that pedestal and get back to that we the people, because it don't change.
Well, I thank
it
you, Dr. Walker,
to make a community.
For coming on the show. We only got a couple of seconds left, and I thank you for coming on the show. It's been enlightening and joyful, and good luck in your campaign.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me, and I had a great time talking to you two this evening. I look forward to listening to you guys sometimes on the show and just enjoying the moment, I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. We have show Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Everybody, another week.
Okay.
I am because we are because I am. Good night.
Hold it now.